They defiled Altenbach's wife, killed him and his sons, made off with his chickens and yearlings. I think the food was their object. Narmander said the leader had red hair, which sounds like Falkenstein's Bergvogt from the watchtower. The hare heaved a deep breath and stepped outside into the yard. Dietrich followed him.
I'll send Max out, Manfred said, but there are too many dells and meadows in those hills, and a small band might lurk unseen for a long time.
Dietrich? He hesitated.
The baker's son was with them.
So, that was what Heinrich meant.
Narmander heard his master call the boy by name. He's hanged himself for certain now, the fool. It lacks now only his capture and a stout rope.
Evil companions led him astray.
They've led him to the gallows. Altenbach's older boy, Jakob, was it? Raked him with a sickle and laid open his cheek.
He paused, perhaps reflecting on the similar wound more honorably obtained by Eugen.
And it was Oliver who cut him down.
Dietrich had noticed the two boys, lying where they had fallen in the barnyard, a bloody sickle clasped in the elder brother's hand. Had Oliver imagined himself a knight doing battle? He had owned a lively imagination capable of imposing its fruits on the world about him. Now he was a murderer of children. Dietrich whispered a prayer for Jakob and Jasper, for Heinrich and Gerda, and for Oliver.
Yeah, said Manfred, noting the gesture. I don't know if poor Altenbach saw them fall. I hope he died, thinking his sons would carry on his blood.
In the silence that followed, the sound of the distant bell came once more. Dietrich and Manfred looked at one another, but neither said what he thought the omen presaged.
13, June 1349, at Thiers, the commemoration of Ephraim of Syria. June came, and in the timeless wheel of the seasons the winter fields were harvested and the resting field ploughed for the September planting. Fully half the plough days were allotted to the hare's salland, so that while the Weistumer called for rest from labors at eventide, the free tenants kept hand to plough on their own manses to make up the lost time. One of Trude Metzger's oxen had died of a murrain the week before, and so she harnessed a cow to her team, though with marked lack of enthusiasm on the cow's part. Dietrich and Hans watched the villagers at work from a slab of granite at the edge of the great woods. In the rock's crevices, Dietrich marked the large blue flowers of adder heads and resolved to tell Theresia of their location. Nearby, the spring that ran near the Krenkish camp tumbled into the valley. What foods grow you in your country? Dietrich asked. They must differ from those we grow here.
Hans became as one with the granite slab on which he squatted. This absolute stillness into which the Krenken sometimes fell no longer frightened Dietrich, but he did not yet understand what the habit signified. Then Hans's antennae twitched, and he said,
The terms do not overset well. But we grow plants much like your grapes and beans and turnips and cabbage. Your wheat is something strange to us, and likewise our foods include some strange to you. Great leaf, 12-stem. Ah, how my throat longs for their smack.
May you taste them soon. Is your vessel yet ready to depart?
A parting of the soft lips. You tire of my company?
Never that. But there will be difficulties should you remain much longer.
Yes. I have heard you consort with demons.
Hans's lips gaped, and he made threatening gestures.
Perhaps I will fly to this Strasbourg and frighten the bishop into surrender.
Pray do not.
Rest easy. Soon your demons shall trouble you no more.
He hunched forward as if poised to leap and stretched forth his arm.
I see movement on the Bear Valley Road.
Dietrich shaded his eyes against the distance. Dust, he said at last. Use your far speaker and alarm Baron Grosswald. I fear he must hide his people once again.
At first the travellers were shadows against the westering sun, and Dietrich, waiting in the road astride his rouncy, heard the weary clop of the hooves and the whining complaints of the axle well before he could discern their features. But as they closed, he saw that the man astride the jennet wore a fringed talit, and curled his long graying hair into elaborate ringlets. It needed no yellow star on his cloak to identify him. A second man, meanly dressed, and both sharper of feature and darker in complexion, and wearing his hair in two thick black braids, slouched upon the wagon bench with a servant's resignation. The awning overhanging the wagon shielded two women, garbed in veils. The Jew noted Dietrich's garb, and said with the briefest dip of his head,
"Beaster, my lord."
Dietrich knew the Jews, who were strict observers of their law, were forbidden to greet or to return the greeting of a Christian, and so, by "my lord," the man had meant in his heart his own rabbi and not Dietrich. It was a deft stratagem by which he could observe both the innumerable laws of his tribe and the conventions of courteous discourse.
"I am Malachi ben Shlomo," the old man said. "I seek the lands of Duke Albrecht."
His voice reeked of Spain. "The Duke disposes of fief nearby called Niederhochwald," he told them. "This is the road to Oberhochwald, held by the same heir. I will take you to him, if it pleases." The old man brushed with his fingers a gesture that meant to lead on, and Dietrich turned his horse toward the village. "Have you come from Strasbourg?" Dietrich asked.
"No, Regensburg."
Dietrich turned to him in surprise. "If you seek Habsburg lands, you have come the wrong way."
"I took what roads I could," the old man said to Dietrich.
Dietrich brought the Jew to Manfred's Hof, where he told his story. The blood libel had sparked riots in Bavaria, it seemed, and Malachi had been forced to flee, his home burned, his possessions plundered.
"That was infamous," Dietrich exclaimed.
Malachi dipped his head.
"I had suspected so, but my thanks for the confirmation."
Dietrich ignored the sarcasm, and Manfred, much affected by the man's woes, bestowed sundry gifts on him, and conducted him personally to the manor house in Niederhochwald, where Malachi would await a party of the Duke's men to escort him safely across Bavaria to Vienna. The one place in Oberhochwald where the Jews would not betake themselves was inside the church of St. Catherine, so many of the Krenken had hidden themselves there. Dietrich, entering to prepare for the mass, spied the gleaming eyes of Krenken perched among the rafters. He repaired to the sacristy, and Hans and Gottfried followed. "Where are the others?" he asked them.
"At the camp," Hans told him. "Though it is warm now, they have grown soft these past few months, and find the woods less congenial than the village. We in turn find their company less congenial, and so have come here. The Kratzer asks when they can emerge."
"The Jews depart tonight for the lower woods. Your folk may return to their labors tomorrow."
"That pleases," said Hans. "Work is the mother of forgetting."
"A difficult mother," Gottfried said, "with so little food to sustain one."
This puzzled Dietrich, the Lenten fast being long past. But Hans held a hand out to silence his companion. He hopped to the window from which he viewed the village.
"Tell me about these Jews and their special foods."
Gottfried had turned to the vestments and appeared to study them, but in that head half-cocked way that showed he was also listening closely.
"I know little of Jewish foods," Dietrich said, "save that some, like pork, they shun."
"Much like us," Gottfried said, but Hans again silenced him. "Are there other foods which they eat but you do not?"
By the stillness of the Krenken, Dietrich knew that the question was important. Gottfried's comment, with its implication of Judaizing tendencies, troubled him.
"I know of none," he said carefully.
"But they are a very different folk."
"So different as Gottfried from me."
At Hans's question, Gottfried turned from his inspection of the mass vestments and flapped his soft lips. Dietrich said, "I see no difference between you."
"Yet his folk came once to our land and—" "But that is the foregone time, and all has changed. You may have noticed that Shepherd speaks differently. In her Heimat, what we call Grand Krenkisch is little used. so the Heinzelmonken must twice translate. By us, you and Malachi seem much the same, save for the hair and the garb and the food. Yet we overheard that your folk attack them and drive them from their homes and even kill them. It cannot be this usury I hear of. As thought-lacking as it is to kill a man because you owe him money, it is doubly so to kill a man because you owe someone else money.